Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in.
Hey everyone, this is your host, Xavier Jaye, tuning in for the second episode of Season 2 of the Hoban Minute. And I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Bob Hoban. How you doing today, Bob?
Doing great. It's good to be here with you.
Likewise. Fantastic. Glad to hear that you're doing well. And we are joined by our wonderful guest today, Mr. Douglas Gordon, founder of Canex. How you doing today, Doug?
I'm great, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a Wednesday. We've got the major portion of the workday behind us, and looking forward to having a conversation with you about cannabis, Jamaica, and the world at large.
Lovely. Looking forward to it, man.
Right on. So, you know, I think we'd like to start with learning a little bit more about yourself, what you do in the industry, Canex, and the role Jamaica has in the world at large when it comes to cannabis. But of course, let's first start with you personally. Tell me, you know, how you got involved with cannabis, and kind of what your road, let's say, to the industry has been.
Well, mine is really born out of a real passion and desire to see the Caribbean prosper. I'm originally from Trinidad, and Trinidad is the home of the steel pan. So it's the only instrument that was invented in the 21st century. And, you know, it makes beautiful, melodious music. You know, we use it at our carnivals. And, you know, in the mid-80s, they discovered that the steel pan had been trademarked in Japan. And, you know, lo and behold, there's a big uproar in the country around how could that possibly happen and the government needs to fix it. Well, as you all know, it doesn't quite work like that. And so the parallel for me was in early 2016 when I saw that Jamaica decriminalized, and I'd read an article in the Wall Street Journal. I think it had said Peter Thiel had about $12 million in cannabis at the time, some fund. And I found it surprising because that's not really news at that point in time with Peter Thiel and, you know, investment portfolio. So I found it strange, but, you know, it didn't really propel me to do anything. And then 2 days later, I saw on the news in Jamaica that there was a town hall meeting where they were talking about the decriminalization of cannabis and how now they had a medical legal framework to legalize and move forward and grow the industry. And, you know, what happened there was just, you saw so much fear from the local and traditional farmers, you know, them looking and saying, how are you going to protect this industry so people from overseas don't come in and just, you know, take it over, and all the work and all the cultural appropriation that, you know, has been around is just going to perpetuate and leave the Jamaican in the cold. And that just drew me back to what I saw with Trinidad and the steel pan. And like I said, I have a real passion for the Caribbean. And I just said to myself, wow, you know, these three events, just remembering Trinidad, the article in the Wall Street Journal, seeing this thing on the news, if I don't do something, in 6 years, how will I feel about not doing anything? Because I had no experience in cannabis whatsoever. I had no real experience in B2B events, really. I had a lot of experience in B2C events. And I just looked and I said, what could I possibly do? And I just landed at this place for whatever reason. And I felt, you know, if I could bring a conversation to Jamaica where folks who are interested in the industry across different aspects of the industry, so doctors talking to doctors, scientists talking to scientists, cultivators talking to cultivators, business people to business people. If I could bring folks who are in the legal market globally doing this and folks in the local market who wanted to do this, if I could bring these people together, then we could have a platform whereby information and knowledge could exchange hands, and hopefully that would give, you know, the Jamaican cannabis industry an opportunity to leapfrog over a lot of, you know, potential errors and find relationships and formulations and inspiration, if you will, about what it could look like into the future. And it was really on that basis Canex was conceptualized, just as a way to do something, because if the train just left Jamaica and I felt for whatever reason I did nothing, I would look at myself and say, you should have done something. And so it was worth giving it a good old college try to try to put something together. That's how Kynex got conceptualized and started. And then we've just, you know, taken it from that place to where it is today, every year iterating, realizing the significance and the opportunity industry, recognizing the need to increase the platform, expand it. And that's really the genesis of it.
Well, and Douglas, that's what you've built. There's not a question about it. I think the most recent CanEx that I attended before the pandemic in Jamaica in Montego Bay was quite good. The Jamaica CanEx, and I know you've got that event coming up here, and we'll talk a little bit more about what's to come. But you have, in my opinion, achieved what you set out to achieve. You brought global cannabis leaders to Montego Bay. From all walks of life, you mix those cannabis leaders from around the world with local politicians, local bureaucrats, and agency heads, for lack of a better way to put it, the traditional Jamaican cannabis community with some of our good friends, and including but not limited, of course, to First Man and some of those other folks from the local community, mm-hmm. some of the Jamaican legends in the space. Mm-hmm. And you're set to do that again, but you've also built a following for CanEx outside of Jamaica. You've had events in New York, in Florida, overseas, and you and I happened to run into each other and spent a lot of time together overseas. So the international marketplace is fascinating, but that's all a tribute to what you have built and bringing people together. But what do we have to look forward to coming up in the next couple of weeks in Montego Bay for Jamaica CanEx 2022? And this will be the return post-COVID, and I think a lot of us are really looking forward to getting down there.
Yeah, you know, Bob, thank you for saying that. It's quite the journey, and it is rewarding, but at the same token, there's just so much more to do. And I think what we've landed on in anticipation of this particular CanEx, which is our fifth, you know, so in cannabis years, it's like we're doing 20 years worth of conferences, right? But what I'm actually very excited about is the fact that, you know, a lot of the different sectors all thought that they could do it by themselves. You know, the licensed producers independently felt that they could solve the problems that they needed to solve for themselves by themselves. You know, some of the different growing groups and Rastafarian groups and those representing different co-ops and so forth, you know, advocated for solutions that they identified that could help themselves. And in many ways, that's what made the industry not progress at the rate that it should have, not step into the opportunity fully that Jamaican cannabis represents globally. So in many ways, I think this is a wonderful reset for this industry. You know, I've spent a lot of my time in the last few weeks talking to different stakeholders in different groups and saying, now do you realize that we need to work together? Now do we realize that when we're advocating with regulators and policymakers, 20 different ideas from different sources, it's impossible for anyone to settle on what are the priorities, you know? And that's, people have started to come around for that, you know? And that, I think, bodes extremely well for the future of the Jamaican cannabis industry because, you know, the time I spent in Germany last month at a couple of conferences, I can tell you I've never felt as bullish, as confident about the future of the cannabis industry because it's based on fundamentals. It's based on demand curves. It's based on different sectors. It's based on health insurance reimbursements. It's based on new medicines, new product formats, all of these things which are fundamental to growing an industry. You know, we've had so much puff in the air in Jamaica in particular with entities that came in and essentially wanted to use Jamaica as a press release platform. Not all. It's not true to say that's all of all the investors that came in, but quite a number did. And we allowed ourselves as a country, as a market, to be used for that purpose. And because we were fragmented, you know, many people pursued these paths because they thought it would serve them specifically, only to realize that when some of these promises were unfulfilled, as a collective, we weren't advocating for the refinement and the application and the rules and how they were applied that would serve the industry. So I'm very excited about the fact that we're getting back to a more cohesive type of unified perspective, which is what I'm advocating and hoping that we will really stand for. But I also feel it. I feel that people are looking for a true, something to hold on to. They're looking and they're understanding that they need to reevaluate how we go about serving this industry. And in many ways, I think it also opens us back up to recognizing that we are serving a plant. We are serving a plant with superhuman capabilities, if you want to call it that, but it's one that we have the privilege and the honor to serve, and we cannot lose sight of that. So even as we build our businesses, we build our associations, we build our industries, it's with the understanding that this plant has to be respected, recognized, and honored, and all the folks who have served it in the past, particularly the indigenous communities, the Rastafarian communities here in Jamaica, have to be a part of the equation. And now we have to find the solutions that make it inclusive and make it a collective benefit. Because, you know, when people really understand that Jamaica has a unique place in this global landscape, you know, we all talked, and I'm guilty of it myself, when we started, about cannabis as a commodity. It's true, except Jamaican ganja is also a finished product. So, you know, it has a place on retail stores across the globe because of its unique heritage. And if we don't cherish that, then, you know, Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean is going to lose a fantastic opportunity to really change the underlying lives of so many people in the society. And I think that's a great responsibility that we all have to honor and cherish. So I'm excited for the opportunity to come out of this CANEX with people together, with issues that are being ventilated and solutions that are being formulated, and with the benefit and the insight of folks like yourself, Bob, you know, participating and giving solutions that have worked in other jurisdictions. So people are trying to reinvent the wheel.
Just to put that in a real-time issue, in 2019, when we were there, I believe that was September of 2019, if I'm not mistaken, it was when the vape crisis came out in the cannabis industry. So there were prominent players from all over the globe, and the issue of vape technology, vape cartridges and the like, and people getting sick and knee-jerk perhaps reactions by different states and immediately putting bans on vape products and looking at banning them for the long term. That happened when we were there, and it was the buzz of the conference. In every corner of every hallway were people talking about this and how it affects their business. But what I found was, particularly as the night went on, 5, 10, 15 people came together, and the discussion about how to address this from either a public relations and a scientific and a supply chain standpoint, and how to frame the issue, that ultimately came together in real time. And I'm sure it was happening in many pockets and around the globe, but it was happening in real time in Montego Bay at that conference. And there were actionable items that actually that came out of it in real time for the businesses from a legal strategy and from a public relations strategy. And that's not only a credit to you, but it's a credit to the community that exists. So ultimately, hopefully nothing like that happens, excuse me, when we're all together in a few weeks. But at the end of the day, it was the epitome of what you're trying to build. And in real time, strategies were developed on the ground in Jamaica that were ultimately implemented. And you know, we've come a long, long way since that occurred.
Yeah.
And in 3 weeks, you know, there might be another crisis that comes up, because every day is a new one here in the cannabis space. But knock on wood, we won't have that kind of problem. But no, I think you said some really interesting things there, Doug, and especially that steel drum analogy with Japan trademarking that from, you know, from the Caribbean, is that I think it's really interesting looking at Jamaica as, you know, this cultural hub for cannabis, right? You think of Rastafarians and, you know, the green, yellow, red flag and the Marley name and kind of this cultural heritage that comes along with the cannabis plant, but yet we still see, as you said, that Jamaica is somewhat lagging behind when it comes to policy reform in the global market. And so what do you think, you know, Jamaica's role will be moving forward? Is it going to be as kind of this, you know, cultural hub where brands are going to come and use, you know, almost like you said, a press release, oh, we've got a Jamaican location now, you know, everything's set, or is it more as potentially a networking opportunity, you know, as CANEX continues to expand its footprint? What do you really see Jamaica's role being in the international cannabis market?
Well, I think once we introduce some of the, you know, the fundamental pillars, if you will, of building any industry into the market, then Jamaica has a really strong shot at building this out properly. You know, we've engaged, we as Canix have engaged Bo Whitney to come down and do an economic sort of market assessment for the Caribbean. So each country in CARICOM can actually have data points and projections about how this is going to benefit their economy. Now, this is not the job of a Canix. This is not our responsibility, quote unquote. But in the absence of that collective, it just needs to be done, because the challenge is that people don't appreciate, which is kind of ironic, right? As if here we talk about Jamaica as a cultural hub, and in this respect, sort of Jamaica is the flagship destination in the Caribbean around cannabis. But the stigmas locally are more acute than they are in North America. You know, we have to educate people about use of cannabis. We have to educate people that this is not a gateway drug. We have to educate people that, you know, the reason the war on drugs and the reason that it was demonized had nothing to do with its actual use. It has to do with other purposes. That's a process that still has not been done properly. So education and a proper sort of marketing and PR campaign to sensitize the population needs to happen, to sensitize the other regulatory bodies that are involved in this industry and making sure that it's safe and a public good. Those have to be sensitized so that right through their chain, they understand that this is a healthy and a health benefit solution. They also have to understand the economic outcomes. And that's what the work from Bo that he's going to present here, I think, is going to be have a fundamental and very important and significant impact in terms of how this industry grows in Jamaica. And Xavier, once you have some of those fundamental, the whys of the industry understood, articulated, and shared, then you will start to see different types of commercial activity. And what and so that means it's not a function of Jamaica's stake being a function of people who come here and just experience cannabis in Jamaica. That's one angle, absolutely. Cannatourism has tremendous potential, you know, but doing it in a way that's not just coming in here to smoke a spliff while you're in Jamaica and saying, I'm having a spliff in Jamaica. Yeah, there's a market for that, no doubt. But there's also a market for going on a cultural, historic tour of cannabis and understanding it from an indigenous perspective all the way through to today's world and how that works there. There's an opportunity for medical research in Jamaica. You have a very highly skilled set of folks at the university, and they could do very well with this kind of work. You know, it's a good lower cost place to get that access to clinical trials and so forth in a jurisdiction where there's this historical relevance. You have, you know, a myriad of other opportunities that can happen right here in Jamaica, as well as the export of genetics, as well as flower, as well as finished products. You know, as we go to more finished products, you can see it there on a shelf where tincture that has, you know, made in Jamaica has a different niche appeal to the one next that's made in that particular jurisdiction. It's always going to have that. So the impact is colossal and the opportunity is massive. But without the fundamentals to make sure that, you know, the manufacturers of Jamaica who have manufacturing expertise also understand that this is an input, this is a product category that they can include in their SKUs and their product mix. You know, you're talking about a cultivator or maybe a vertically integrated operator eventually getting up to a scaled manufacturing solution. You know, that's sort of, you know, that's the wrong way around. So those are the things that once we solve them here are going to have exponential scalable benefits. First of all, throughout the Caribbean, and then from the Caribbean to the world. So hence the reason why I think, you know, and when you're talking about a population of 3 million people, and you look at the global population of cannabis consumption, you look at the cultural association of Brand Jamaica in the space, you really start to see why this particular industry can have a massive impact on a country that has a GDP per capita of 4,500 US, and quickly see that cannabis has the potential to change the lives of folks in this country in a significant way. because of that global presence. And then once they can put out quality product on a sustained basis, you know, in a professional manner, I think really and truly this has the potential to truly change lives for the people of Jamaica because of their global significance in this space.
We talk a lot about the, you know, the cultural significance, et cetera, and we couldn't agree more. At the end of the day, though, how do you protect Jamaican cannabis, the genetics themselves? How do you represent authenticity and a verified and verifiable product, you know, using the steel pan example? Jamaican cannabis is world renowned for so many different reasons. Yeah. And yet, you know, you can walk into a store down the street here in Denver, Colorado, and pick up something that purports to be from Jamaica, whether it is or whether it isn't, you know, is almost besides the point. But how do you protect that? Because that's legacy. That's IP. That's associated. How do you protect that? How do you address that?
You know, it's an incredibly poignant question, Bob, because fundamentally, you're talking about, you know, the Rastafarian way of living, the liberty that obtains, right? Is that this is for everybody, you know? It's that sharing. It's that this is good, so you should have some because it's good for you too. You don't have money for it? No problem. It's not about that. It's coming from the earth. It's that way of living that at the same token can be abused, right, and taken advantage of. So you need to find, and I don't know the exact solution for this, but you need to find some body, some entity, some middle ground that can sit and protect that while allowing that to still be as authentic and real as it exists. You know, so maybe one of the solutions is, you know, I've thought about, I'm sure other people have as well as other alternatives, but, you know, is there some sort of a seal, sort of like, you know, how you have organic in the United States, right? The USDA organic seal. Is there a way to have something to be certified where the certification process is what's protected? And that certification is now according to the values of the Rastafarian community, for example. And they're getting a return, they're getting an income stream off of that certification process. And, you know, that's according to specific standards, which are the values that you live by. So it becomes not just brand Jamaica, but it becomes brand Jamaica with another qualifier so that you do weed out the people who are doing exactly what you say. You know, I was in Vegas and I had this conversation at MJ Biz with a guy. And he was like, well, why the hell do I need to go to Jamaica? He's like, I can just go get the strains, grow them in Canada, and they're Jamaican strains, and I'll just market them like that. And I was like, you know, it wasn't just the fact that you could do that. It was the brazen way in which, you know, that's what he intended to do, and it was okay. And so, yeah, I mean, I personally believe, and this might sound a little bit woosah, that this industry has its own internal, much more powerful self-regulation. You know, you don't live authentic to the plant, it's going to take you out at some point. I just believe that. And so I do believe you have to live it the right way, but I do believe that we have to find, you know, solutions, particularly for, you know, these communities, to ensure that the principles and the values that have made the Rastafarian association with cannabis so rich and so pure and so powerful are maintained, but at the same time, there's a way in the commercial ecosystem that they're protected. And I don't have the answer to that personally, but I would be very, very open and encouraging of anybody who did, and, you know, happily provide Canix or whatever other connections I have to try to perpetuate that and to try to, you know, implement that in the local market here.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a very salient point about the cannabis industry at large, where it's this opportunity. And I think quite a few folks, especially here in the United States and in some international jurisdictions, do see the cannabis industry as this kind of, you know, wealth redistributor and equalizer that allows maybe some marginalized communities that haven't been able to participate in, you know, tech booms, for example, to be able to finally put their stamp on something and, you know, get what's right to them. For some of the work that they've done for the cannabis plan. I think, you know, Jamaica, I don't really think there's a story or an example quite as poignant as Jamaica and the Rastafarian community. particularly when you think of names like Bob Marley, you know, and some of the brands that the Marley family has started here in the United States. To me, it's always surprising that, you know, those resources don't seem to have been dedicated to Jamaica, which, you know, there's a business case to be made there too. But from a cultural perspective, it's important to make sure that we are paying homage to the roots and to the people that have done the foundational groundwork to get the industry to where it is today. So,
100%. You know, I would say, you know, when you listen to Bob Marley, not just his lyrics, but his words, you know, it's prophetic. You know, here, this is like, what did he die in 84? And they seem more relevant today than they did back then. You know, how did he know? You know, when you look at Peter Tosh thinking about legalizing it, like, the things that these powerful, iconic individuals spoke to about cannabis are more relevant today because more of us are listening than they ever have been. And I think as humanity, to talk about not, you know, you need to use terms like redistributing wealth, you know, people get their, you know, they get their stuff in a bunch, you know, quick, right? Let's pull out the guns because now we have a war. That's not going to work. And it's not about that. I think it's just about understanding that this is a source of value that has helped to put this on the map, to help us to understand it. They paid a price. And it's not about sitting down here and saying, okay, let's just, you know, send back some money because they paid a price. No, there's value in that can be utilized in how we build going forward. And let's find creative ways so that, you know, the Rastafarian community is participatory in it. You know, Jamaica as a country, not from charity, but by looking at the clever ways to position the country and the brand in this space is participatory. You know, there's other Caribbean regions that have, that have other value adds to this whole space. Let's make it participatory so that you have capital, you have business leaders who are looking at this not from a charitable perspective, I don't want that, but looking at it from a, if we incorporate this as part of our ethos, we can be a better business. In the same way, you know, looking at a homogenous group of men to run your company is not the best way to make the most profitable, long-term, sustainable, you know, doing good by doing right type of values-based business. It's the same principle, you know, it's the same principle, in my opinion, of leveraging some of these historical elements to make a better future.
Yeah, no, I think that's a super important lesson and one that the cannabis plant has taught us. Like you said, it's an ethos that runs through the industry. And I think people, either through their own consumption or their experience with other people, are starting to wake up to that. And there is a real shift from, you know, the greed is good, Gordon Gekko mentalities mm-hmm. of the 90s to kind of the more harmonized and holistic view that we have of the world today. And I think cannabis really, as you've said multiple times, is an industry that has an opportunity to really leapfrog some other more traditional industries in creating that, you know, kind of next style or, you know, version or approach, let's say, to doing business on a global scale.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree.
Very important. So Doug, you know, as we wrap this thing up here, any shout outs, companies, you know, where can people find you, socials, what's the best way for our audience to reach out to you if they want to follow up on CanX Jamaica or any of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, we're on the socials as CanX Jamaica. Our website is canxjamaica.com. And, yeah, I mean, listen, it's a real pleasure to be here. It's always a pleasure to speak and interface with Bob. You know, I find it a real privilege, to be honest, because, you know, his very easy way of showcasing and sharing, you know, and breaking down difficult subject matter so people can understand it. You know, we need more and more and more of that in the cannabis and the hemp space, because we need more and more people to understand how accessible it is, how easy it is to break apart and understand, you know, how significant this industry and these industries, if you will, can help us and serve us in moving into the future. So, you know, I appreciate you having me as your guest, but I also just want to say it's really a privilege to be able to have people like Bob and interface with them and see them go around the world and break apart the subject matter so people can digest it. The more of us that can follow in that footstep and do more of that, is there more people who understand it? Is there more people who can implement it? Is there more people who can support it? And all of that's just going to serve our country, I mean, our world better, you know, better sustainability, better hiring, you know, better sources of income, et cetera, and better health. So thank you for having me. And I look forward to seeing you guys in Jamaica soon.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. All right, Doug. Well, you have a great rest of the day here.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And, as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.